Chapter 2 talks about project initiation. This chapter really discusses how the project gets started. We already know the project gets started because somebody identifies a possible problem or an opportunity. The first thing we want to look at is what is a system request. And we talked briefly about that in a previous lecture, but it's nothing more than a document that describes the reasons for wanting to build a system and the business value that the system is expected to provide. It should include five components. One, the sponsor of the project. The sponsor is nothing more than the person who is probably going to pay for the development of the new system. The business need. The business requirements. What business requirements are going to be needed for this particular project? The business value. What value, what good is this project for the business? How is it going to further the goals and aspirations of the company? And the last one, are there any special issues? Now, on page 45, figure 2.1, you would actually see in this figure the five components I just talked about, and they give you some examples of, you know, the business need, the business requirements, etc. So you may want to refer to figure 2.1 if there's a need to create a system request. Also on page 45, in the section known as the CD selection, on page 61, that is page 61, in CD selection, you'd also see a very good example of a system request form. Now, once a system request is approved by the committee, the next step is the feasibility study or feasibility analysis. The purpose of feasibility is to determine if the project is feasible. Is it doable? If it's doable, then the project actually comes to life. If it's not doable, then the project is not pursued. Feasibility must address three specific issues. The first one is technical feasibility. Can we build it? What are the technical risks involved in building this particular system? Some of the risks include whether or not users are familiar or unfamiliar with the technology, whether the IT department is familiar or unfamiliar with the technology. Another risk has to do with the project size and the complexity of the project. Another risk is the ability to integrate the new system with existing systems. These are all examples of technical risk. You have to realize that the feasibility is not only to explore whether or not the project is possible or feasible, but also to assess the level of risk involved. The level of risk would help to make a determination as to whether the company should or should not pursue the project. The next type of feasibility is economic feasibility, and we are trying to answer the question, is it worth it? What are the costs and benefits to the company should they pursue the development of this project? The more expensive or complex the project, the more rigorous the analysis. What are some of the things we ought to include under the economic feasibility, the development costs, the one-time costs, operational costs, which is a recurring cost, tangible benefits versus the intangible benefits. These are the aspects that we want to assess. There are 7 steps in conducting feasibility analysis. 1 is to identify costs and benefits. Assign values to the costs and the benefits. Determine your cash flows. Determine your net present value. Determine your return on investment. Calculating your break-even point. And graphing the break-even point. People tend to prefer graphs and charts over just numbers. So showing the break-even point in the form of a graph, in addition to putting the number someplace on the report, is a good idea. A good feasibility report must, and I repeat, a good feasibility report must include these 7 items as a minimum. There may be other things you want to consider, but these 7 items are pretty much standard on a good feasibility report. The question then becomes, why are these items, these 7 items, necessary? Well, first of all, the first item, which is identify costs and benefits, are obvious. You can't do anything without identifying the costs of the different line items and the benefits associated with each. Then, of course, you have to assign the values. Then you have to know what your cash flows are. You can't do an analysis without determining what the cash flows are. Now, the net present value is important because it considers the time value of money. Okay. And if you had a finance class, this would make a lot of sense. The time value of money has to do with, you know, the interest earned over time and what something is worth at the present moment as opposed to what it would be worth in the future. And that affects significantly the analysis. Another item here is the return on investment. It's important to know what your return on investment is going to be. But if you were to judge a product just based on the return on investment, you wouldn't get a good picture. Why? Because if I told you that your return on investment is 20% and that's all you know, and you base your decision on that, you may be in for a surprise. What I didn't tell you is that you're not going to get your money back for 50 years. Having said that, would you undertake the project? The answer would be probably not, right? Because it takes too long to get your money back, which means there's considerable risk that you may not get your money back. So 3 to 5 years is usually a heuristic that companies would use in terms of an acceptable ROI. Then the other one is calculating the break-even point. Therefore, to get a true and rich picture of the feasibility analysis, these different perspectives, ROI, net present value, break-even point, etc., paints a lovely picture that aids your decision-making in terms of whether or not you want to proceed. Now, there's also a template for the feasibility report. One is shown on page 47, figure 2.3. Another one is shown on page 49, figure 2.4. Another example is on page 51, how do you assign values to costs and benefits. There's also a complete example on page 52, figure 2-7. The break-even point is shown on page 54. And then in the city selection, you would see on page 65 a more elaborate example. So you may want to consider these different templates when you have to create a feasibility report. The last part of the feasibility report has to do with organizational feasibility, and it really addresses the question: if this system were to be developed, will the users actually use it? If they do not, then it means that system is going to be considered a failure. Now, this is a very challenging aspect, simply because one could never predict with certainty human behavior. So even though the system meets the expectations and the requirements of users, it still may not be used. A simple reason why it may not be used might be that the support for users after the system was developed was insufficient, and so users got turned off, and as a result decided to go back to using their old practices, old technology. So, assessing whether or not users will actually use the system is an important part of the feasibility. We want to assess the risk of users not using the system. Therefore, project selection and approval are based on several factors. One, the feasibility report. Another is the project portfolio. The project portfolio is similar to a portfolio of investment assets. You want to make sure that you have in your portfolio projects, high risk, low risks, you know, looking at the mix of projects in the pipeline. These things are also important in making sure that you have a good balance. A third issue is the timing and other organizational and environmental issues. For example, company reorganization could affect your decision to get involved with a particular project, a merger, what's going on in the industry, government regulation. These also play an important part in the organizational feasibility and feasibility in general. This concludes Chapter 2. What you should get from Chapter 2 is basically how to perform or conduct a feasibility analysis, and also how to create a system request.